Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melbourne and broadcast through the Community Radio Network. It's always a pleasure to bring you through their stories, life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. Welcome to another program in the award-winning series of Listen to Older Voices. I'm Rob Greaves, and this is the second and final part of the life and times of Bonnie Giorgi. In part one, we learned that Bonnie was born in 1939 in the town of Malden, Missouri, in the USA. Eventually, her family moved to California, and Bonnie goes to high school, and while working at the local car hop restaurant, she meets Ivan Giorgi, a cook whom she took a dislike to. Yet, a romance blossoms, and they eventually marry. This week we follow their adventures when they moved to Australia in the late 1960s. Told in the USA that there wasn't much fresh milk in Australia, that there were giant lizards and kangaroos in the streets, and on arriving, finding a major power shutdown, Bonnie wasn't sure what she got herself and her family into. However, we learn that not only was the move successful, but the reasons Bonnie believes for the ordinary person, life in Australia is better than that in the USA. Bonnie regales us with many stories, and some of them are very funny, as she gives examples of how different meanings of words between Australia and the USA led to some strange, if not embarrassing, situations. After many decades of a good life in Australia, Ivan passed away from bowel cancer in 2003, and Bonnie was on her own for the first time ever. Did Bonnie cope? Did she ever? We pick up now with Bonnie talking about the very close relationship her mother and Ivan developed after their marriage in the USA.
My husband and my mother were like that.
They got really close.
There was an argument or something, it was me against the two of them.
Oh, really?
And, you know, when I married my husband, I had a fur coat. I worked very, very hard to buy this bloody coat. And after I had been married for about 4 years, my mother came down from Oregon. And he said something, and she said, oh, snow's 3 foot on the ground, and blah, blah, blah. He went to the closet, got this coat, and gave it to her and said, take this and wear it, it'll keep you warm. And she took it. And when she left, I said, that was my coat, not yours. And he said, well, you just look like a fat little teddy bear in it.
Oh, Bonnie. Oh, dear.
So I thought, oh, you never liked that coat, did you?
That was a charming thing to say.
Yes, but he never said nothing before.
How long was it after you got married before you could buy your own house? Was that very quickly?
We bought our own house 2 years afterwards because he bought it on his GI Bill.
Right. GI Bill, that's right. Now, he fought in Korea.
Yes.
Was that after you got married or before?
Before. Before. He was taken from high school 3 weeks before graduation.
They took him just 3 weeks before graduation?
Because he had been in the National Guard.
They
took them
right
before, yes. And that was a funny joke, too, because when he was in high school, he washed dishes in this restaurant at night.
Right.
And on the weekends. And when he got to the Army, they said, did you work? And he said, yes. And they said, what did you do? And he said, he had worked at a restaurant. So they made him a cook. He never said he'd cook. He didn't know how to cook.
So that's where he learned his skills to come out and then become a cook at the hop.
That's right.
So I'm sorry, can I just check? Did you know him when he went into the Army?
Yes.
You had met him?
Yes.
But you weren't married?
No. Because when we were in high school, we used to go on a Saturday sometimes to this one teacher's house, and we made cakes and stuff, and they used to buy coffee in this tin, and it was a 1 pound can of coffee.
Yep.
And we used to save those, and that's what we made the cakes and sent them overseas into the guys that were in the service.
Right. Oh, that was very clever. So you kept in communication with him while he was over in Korea?
Well, no, we just sent them.
You just sent the
soldiers.
Cakes.
We didn't know who was getting them.
Oh, yeah.
Who was getting them?
Of course. So the Korean War finishes and Ivan comes back. During that time, did you have any other boyfriends?
Well, a few.
Just casual? Yeah. Yeah, just...
Nothing.
Yeah. So Ivan comes back, and because he was in service, the GI Bill gives him access to some money, does it?
It gave us a cheap loan.
Right.
To buy a house.
Whereabouts was the house?
Santa Maria, California.
Right. Is that a pretty area?
It's on the coast, and they always claimed we were right halfway in the middle between San Francisco and Los Angeles.
Oh, okay.
It was, yeah. It was close to drive to San Francisco a couple of hours, or Los Angeles was a couple of hours.
Right. So did you and Ivan go to San Francisco?
Oh, yes. He had relatives in San Francisco, and we used to go up there and stay.
Right.
So I loved San Francisco.
You would have gone to San Francisco in the 1960s then?
Yes.
When the big hippie movement
started. You had to
started.
Wear a flower in your hair.
Yes, that's right. We had to wear a flower in our hair. Did you feel any empathy to those young people, or were they a little bit alien?
Well, I never was into the hippie generation. I had children by then. But I mean, I didn't really relate to that.
Right, okay.
That movement.
So they were a bit strange for you.
Yeah, yes. They were just there.
How many children did you have, Bonnie?
Three.
And the first was?
Markella.
Who was born in what year was Markella?
1960.
Right.
I got married in 59. Right. My husband we got married in June. And he used to tell everybody Markella was born in July. And I said, yes, but would you please tell him it's the year next year later? She was born in 1960.
That must have been a wonderful moment for you.
Mm. Then I had one in 1963.
Right.
And one in 1964.
So you've got a wonderful family. You're living in a state that most people consider it's the best place to live, California. Did you find it that way, or were you missing your home state?
No, I never regretted living in California, but it was just a place.
So what were the circumstances that brought you and your family to Australia?
Okay, living in restaurants a lot of my life. Then my husband wanted to change. We came to Australia. He had a job with Safeway's warehouse when Safeway was just fairly new here in Australia. Came for 3 years.
Oh, you came, yeah, that was the plan, just to come for 3 years.
That's what you came for. Yeah. That's what
and you came straight
for.
To Melbourne?
Yes.
What were your first impressions? No, come on.
Well, when we left California, we had relatives that said to us, even at the airport, now you can just call, we'll bring you home. They have great big lizards that are roaming around the streets and kangaroos hopping down the road. And, you know, I found it strange. We had to go to Los Angeles, and we were interviewed by somebody from Australia. And they told me, now this is in 69, to put my children on powdered milk because there wasn't a lot of fresh milk in Australia.
What?
They told me not to bring anything electrical with me because it wouldn't work.
Well, that I understand.
But they didn't tell me why it wouldn't work.
Oh.
So I was beginning to think, okay, maybe they don't even
have electricity.
They don't even have
no
electricity.
No milk, no electricity, big maybe lizards in the streets.
Maybe there is kangaroos hopping down the road and everything else. And they told me, you know, you don't need any winter clothes. Well, I'm sorry, but I did need winter clothes.
Darn well do.
Then when we got here, was the biggest electricity strike that Australia has ever had. And stuff was getting knocked off the docks into the ocean. And my stuff sitting on the docks.
No.
We were living with an Esky. And we would go and buy ice and put it in the Esky, and what you had to have refrigerated because there was no electricity for the refrigerator.
Oh, welcome to Australia.
Yes. And although, you know, I have never, ever, ever said, I wished I could go home.
Well, that's obvious. You're here still after all those years.
But I had never washed clothes by hand. And I went and bought a washboard. And one day I was washing his white shirts on this washboard at the side of the bathtub when he came home. and the tears are running down my cheeks. And he said, oh, what in the world is wrong? And I said, my mama saw me now. She'd have me on the next airplane home. And that's all I could think of. She would too. She would have. But it didn't kill me.
Well, I've got to say, in some sort of defense, I don't think there would have been many Australian women in 1969 who would have thought they were going to be washing with a washboard.
No, but when you had that no electricity. No
electricity, that's right.
You did.
Yes. But obviously something clicked that you didn't go running straight back home.
No, because everybody thinks America is a great place. And I suppose if you're talking about Silicon Valley or NASA or someplace, it is. But for the common, ordinary people, it's not that fantastic.
Yes.
And it was just as good here and in a lot of ways better, because when I came here, my oldest daughter was just turning 10, and she had already been educated on what marijuana and everything looked like at school because the dope was so rampant and everything. And I thought, this has got to be a better place.
Yes. And of course, in those days, we didn't have the violence on the streets, which we do now, but we didn't then. But the states still had all that, and they still had gun issues.
Yes.
And
okay, I did, when I was a teenager, I had gone deer hunting with my brothers and stuff, and I have shot a 30-odd-6. But we didn't have guns in our house. We didn't have all of that that some people did. But you knew it was there.
Mm.
And there wasn't the prejudice here. Now, when I was in high school, my brother used to play trumpet. And one time, I went with him, and we went to this nightclub to hear this guy play a trumpet.
Yes.
And my brother went up on stage and played with him. And I was put at this table right up front. I was served. Nobody said anything offensive or anything to me. But all I thought the whole time I was there is, if Mama ever finds out we came here, we'll get killed. Because it was an all-Negro nightclub.
Ah, okay.
And that was taboo.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
That was a real taboo. That's just like this mammy that we had that raised us. She fed us kids. If mother wasn't home, she fed us, and then she ate afterwards. And she sat there one night, and she said that if a white girl marries a Negro, he'll treat her like a queen. He'll wait on her hand and foot. But she said it would take a trashy white woman to marry one. So they did not approve of it any more than we did.
So there was a bit of reverse racism as well in that work.
Oh, yes. Hmm. And when I was in high school, this family moved into town that had these children, and one parent was black and one parent was white, and the children were mulattoes. And I always felt sorry for them because they had no friends. The blacks wouldn't accept them, and the whites wouldn't accept them. And not only that, in the States, your friends are according to the level that you live, like your low class or
it's
your middle
status
class.
Status is everything.
Yes. And here I found that people, if they liked you, they came to your house. Didn't matter if your kids took dancing lessons or if you did this or if you did that or if you had three cars. If they
yes.
liked you,
you accepted.
That was it.
Yeah,
didn't matter what right. you owned.
No, that has always been a strength of this country, and I think it's probably something that most Australians would like to try and hold on to dearly.
Yes.
Even though it gets harder as the years go on, because we all get influenced by other people's opinions, and it's a global community, and not all the opinions are good opinions.
No.
But it is a very important part for Australia, isn't it, this acceptance?
Yes. The whole time I have been here, I was only insulted one time. One time, this man called me a bloody Yank. And
sorry
I
for
knew,
laughing, that's so silly.
I know, but the way he said it and in the contents that he said it, I knew I had been insulted. It was I could have been called a lousy bitch or something. And he's the only one. Every other time, I have never been insulted. I've always felt like I was accepted here.
Well, let's hope that one bad experience didn't colour your opinions.
Well, it didn't, or I wouldn't have stayed.
That's right. That's right.
Listen to Older Voices, where you hear stories from older people who chose to make Australia their home. I'm Rob Greaves, and I'm talking with Bonnie Giorgio. And Bonnie is talking about why her move from the US to Australia has been so successful.
So you and the family come over here. Do you settle in quickly, or does it take a while?
We settled in, but it took a while to get used to. Now, when I first got here, there was some real doozies. Like this time, I was standing on the street corner, and that guy come up and said, "Hey, love." And I thought, well, bop you in a minute if you talk to me like that. But then they said, but that's the way, that's all right.
Yes, yes.
And I was working one day in a restaurant, and this girl next door, she comes in and she stands at the door of this small cafe and she hollers at me, "Have you got a rubber?" And I looked at her and I said, well, if I did, I wouldn't be carrying it with me. I said, what the kind of person do you think I am? And then after the end of the shift, she comes over and she says, "I only wanted to rub out the words." Yes. I said, well, then why didn't you ask for an eraser?
Yes, the language differences.
Oh, yeah, there were some times that they were real doozies.
Well, that's a beautiful example. As soon as
because,
you said,
I mean,
knew.
Like I said, they talked English, but it was a different English that we had to learn.
But look, even in Australia, that's the case. We have language in Victoria, which words are different in Queensland. So
yes.
It's like that everywhere in the world. And
another good one was on Christmas. We were out in public, and I said to my children, "If you get back in that swimming pool right now," I said, "I'm going to blister your fanny." "Oh, my God, don't say that," my friend said. And I said, "Why?" Well, then I was told.
Then you were told, yes.
And I thought, okay.
Another one learned.
Yeah. Another one we don't say. Change that one. But it was good.
So did Ivan end up staying with Safeway, or did he move back into cooking, or what?
No, Ivan stayed with Safeways until he retired.
Goodness me, so it was a job for life once he arrived here. Right. What year did he retire in? Can you recall?
He retired in 1999.
30 years he'd spent in the job. That's a long time, yes. I have to ask, Ivan isn't with you anymore. What happened?
Ivan died of bowel cancer in 2003.
That must have been an absolutely highly distressing period for you.
Well, it was because he had never been sick in his life. He had never been in the hospital in his life.
Was just diagnosed.
One morning he got up and said to me, "I think the roast you fed me last night was off." And I said, "Well, I don't think so. Nobody else is sick." But he got really ill. The neighbor next door and I took him up to the hospital in Warburton. And we were there for about half an hour. And the doctor said to me, "I hope you don't have nothing else planned for today," he said, "because I've called an ambulance." And he said, "They'll be waiting for him at the door of Maroondah Hospital." And when we got there, within 2 hours, he was in the operating room.
Goodness me.
And they removed part of his bowel and stuff. And he had bowel cancer.
Oh, what a shock.
They said, 6 months to a year. He lasted 3 years.
So you tried to make the most of that time.
Mm.
Yes. A very distressing period for you and the whole family, of course. Must have left a big hole in your life when he passed on.
It did, because you know what people, when you're young, you don't think about it. And then all of a sudden, I was by myself. In all my life, I had never lived by myself. I had been married longer than I was single.
Of course. Yes.
And I had just never lived by myself. And like my daughter here was still working at that time. So I would just panic because everybody would leave in the morning, and I'd think, oh my God, nobody's going to come home till this afternoon.
What am I going to do?
And this one time I thought, because I'm by myself, I got on the bus and I went down to Churnside Park, and I felt like a real twit. I'm standing in the middle of the shopping center, and I just bursted out in tears, and I thought, I'm here, but I'm still by myself.
Yeah. Yes. It's not the number of people around you, it's the connection with people. Mm-hmm.
It was
lost your main connection.
It was hard.
Yes.
To get used to it first.
Yes.
But then you just tell yourself, this is the way it is. You got to suck it up and get over it.
Did you have help from anyone?
Just my family.
They were good support?
Yes.
I've got to say for listeners, because unfortunately it's not television and we can't show you where we are, but Bonnie has a beautiful, I guess the term, I don't like the term, but I guess they called them granny flats. It's a unit out the back of your daughter's house.
Yes.
Were you living here when Ivan passed?
Yes. We put my daughter and son-in-law, they were in the front house, and we built this unit back here.
That's a better term.
When he was sick.
Right. What brought you to Millgrove?
My daughter there was living up here before we came.
Where were you
we
living?
We were in Dandenong.
Oh, goodness me, that's a big difference in again, for people listening interstate, Dandenong is a very semi-industrial, built-up, everything is close to everything else,
yes,
isn't it?
That's where my kids went to high school and stuff, was
right.
In Dandenong.
But Millgrove is a little bit of a paradise.
Oh, yeah.
What did you think when you first came to Millgrove? Was it stunning for you? Or
yes. I used to come up here because Markella was up here, and I used to come up here like once I came up from grandparents' day at kinder and different things like that. I would come up for the day, and I just loved it up here. It was so not as noisy.
Oh, no.
All the traffic and everything like that, you know.
No, again, for people living interstate, Millgrove has a very small little, it's almost like a little village. You wouldn't have more than about six or seven shops.
Millgrove, we've only got three shops.
Three shops, is it? Yes, it's
we're a wine spot in the road. That's
and, all. And a timber mill.
And a timber mill and a timber fire station.
Yeah, that's right. But it is a most beautiful area. And looking out of your doorway into the back garden, all you can see is green and colour. Green and beautiful coloured flowers. Does it give you delight just sitting here and...
Yes. I was very, very ill last year. And I can't go out and garden anymore or anything. Mm. So that's my garden there.
You're just out on the veranda.
Yeah, but I like my flowers. I like my colours. And I had to have some.
Well, you choose beautifully because they are stunning colours there. You mentioned that with getting older comes health issues. I mean, that they unfortunately go hand in hand. That's obviously slowed you down a bit now.
A bit, yeah, quite a bit.
Was that hard to come to grips with?
To be honest with you, it was very hard because when I spent months being ill and in hospital last year, I almost died.
Right.
They told my family three times I wouldn't last through the night. And I came out of the hospital from a person who weighed 60 kilos and wore a size 16 to a person that weighed 40 kilos.
Wow.
And could wear nothing. And I have worked this last year to put on 4 kilos. I'm up to 44 kilos.
Good for you.
It's a milestone.
Hey, that is. Hey, baby steps. That's what it's about. That's right.
Well, people think it's hard to lose weight, but it's hard to gain it too, I'll tell you. It's just as hard.
Life as you knew it as a young child is quite different to life now for young people. The world has moved quite a bit.
It does, because I've got great-grandchildren, and their life is so different. And I wonder what it's going to be like by the time they're grown.
Do you have concerns for the future for them?
Yes. You really wonder just what it's going to be.
You mentioned football. When I first arrived, we have the Brisbane Boulevard out there for the Brisbane Lions.
My son-in-law has license plates on his car. Yes.
And you and your family are a long time, well, you started off as Fitzroy supporters. Yes. And you mentioned that when you came to Australia, you were almost inducted into Fitzroy by...
Alex Riscutney.
Who was a player for Fitzroy. Yes.
He played for quite a few years for Fitzroy.
Did you used to go to football games?
Oh, on a Thursday night, you used to go from Daddy Dog to the city. You had to go to hear who was picked for the team on Saturday. You couldn't wait to know. You had to know on Thursday night who was going to play. We went to dinner at the club, and you heard who was going to play. The club got half of our money at that time, I'll tell you. Mine, don't mind saying. My granddaughter, who is 35,
goodness,
got her first hand-knitted Fitzroy jumper with a gold lion on the front of it when she was about 6 months old.
So the whole family gets inducted in.
Oh yes.
So it must have been a little bit of a heartbreak when they moved them up to Brisbane.
You know, you really want to know what really bugs me about that?
No, I'd love to.
I was upset about that. But the fact that we were told we had to leave the Junction Oval because it was not safe for sports and the grandstand was blah, blah. And they're using it now for cricket. It's still there. It's still the same. And it's all right. We were forced to go out of state. We did not want to. But
the passion for the club is still there.
It is. The people that were at Fitzroy that were really passionate are still there. In fact, they gave us one of the very old Fitzroy flags was on my husband's coffin when he passed away.
What a lovely offer.
That was
wonderful. Life has dealt you a very interesting hand in over these years. It's been a wonderful story you've shared with us.
Well, thank you.
And thank you very much for being on Listen to Older Voices.
You're welcome.
Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program. Listen to Older Voices is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Community Radio Network.